Greg Kinn, rock philosopher.
The spirit and the essence of rock and roll is sacred. It cannot be cloned. Rock and roll is a mutant form of cultural expression. It's impossible to destroy.
Spoken by a man who's lived it.
Thank you.
The Greg Kinn Show.
Yes, all right. Welcome back to the Greg Kinn Show. Now, I know what you're thinking. No, I'm not doing a Clint Eastwood there. I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, where have we been? Greg, where are you? First of all, I'm sitting here in our new clubhouse with the gang. That would include my good friend Joel Turtle and his son Skylar Turtle. How you doing, guys?
Hey, Greg.
Doing good.
And, you know, first of all, I'm endeavoring to explain where we've been for the last chunk of time here. We had a very busy schedule. We had the Firehouse gig. That was a two-nighter. Had rehearsals for that. I've been doing book signings and interviews every day. And for some reason, it just got to be lights out, you know? Like, there was a calm before the storm, and then boom. And, of course, we're all involved in our fundraising activities. And we got some interesting stories in that department. You know, plus I've been working on the next book and doing book signings all over the place. It's been a really busy time. So I'm going to bring in Skylar Turtle, who technically he's the producer of this show. And I think he can explain probably better than I can. We did a little research, you guys, okay? We did a little research. You know what we found out? We found out that a lot of you listeners were fast-forwarding through the music because you just wanted to hear the talk. Well, hey, got no problem with that. I've always been a talker. You know me. I'm bellicose.
Talk, 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 talk.
Exactly.
That is correct. So we're going to do more of a classic rock roundtable, if you will.
Yeah, and does that mean we're going to play radically less music or no music at all?
Probably no music at all. Maybe we'll bring up some songs or some albums that we want to talk about, but I don't think we're going to be playing too much more of the music. Just doing some backstage stories and some topical news and stuff like that.
Let me ask you a question, Skylar. How often a week do you see a new show being posted? Is this like 2-3 times a week, something like that?
Probably more like 1 or 2 shows a week now.
Yeah, you know, because I got to tell the listeners here, the shows take preparation. You know, Skylar and I would get there a couple hours beforehand and go over this and that and the other, and then doing the show, I used to be Mr. One Take. Now I'm Mr. 1.5 Takes. But, you know, it's still, you got to make sure that the show sounds good and that everything is right. And it does take a lot of work. So we're going to pull back a little bit here, pull back on the reins, try to deliver to you guys a better show, more focused, full of the stuff that you like. And we'll take our time doing it, so it won't be quite the everyday scene that it's been. You know, coming from terrestrial radio, Joel, it was always grinding it out every day. You had to show up. You got points for showing.
Well, this can be much more conversational, and we can, you know, really delve into more topics other than it's just rock and roll.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's an honest way to do the show. I really do, because a lot of times topics come up in conversation that you wouldn't ordinarily, write down beforehand or think about beforehand. They just, the conversation goes there. Like, I've been talking about where we've all been for the last chunk of time. What we've been doing, one of the things that we did was we moved.
That is correct.
Every time you move,
very traumatic.
It is. It's never not traumatic. You go through a lot of, you know, you go through a lot of boxes and you open them, you look, and there's weird stuff in there from 20 years ago. And moving is always like that. Oh, there's a picture of what's her name. And oh, you know, we had a ton of stuff. And plus, we have a lot of technical stuff as well.
A lot of electronics.
A lot of electronics. But we've completed the move. And how would you describe our new digs?
I like the new digs.
They're very comfy.
Cave-like,
but comfy.
Very, very.
And that's kind of what we've been doing. You know, moves like that. We still have a lot of stuff left over there. We're going to have to go over and rent a truck one day and get a bunch of stuff to go. But from now on, you can expect a tighter, cleaner, more dynamic show. Less of that pesky music that seems to get in everybody's way. So we'll be talking about all kinds of, you know, hey, look, they put a muzzle on me whenever I get too far away from, you know, my comfort zone,
when
which
you leave
would be
the reservation.
Yeah, when I when I leave the reservation. Oh, geez. Anyway, we've been talking extemporaneously, and this is the way I want the show to sound like this. This is the way it's very comfortable for me. And it just makes sense. I think people on the other end listening will have the same feel. It'll be like, you're putting on your favorite pair of jeans.
A lot of the fans that were listening to the show and our feedback we were getting were telling us that the shows where you were backstage telling stories or at rehearsals or when we're just BSing around around the office, that's what people want to know. They don't want to know all the rock news and weird stories.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're gonna try out and see how it goes.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that's my comfort zone. You know, I got a PhD in rock and roll, and I can pretty much talk about that till the cows come home. But of course, you get me on some other weird topic, and it's you know, God knows what you can expect. But I think that's part of the fun of the show. So this is the new Greg Kinn Show. You're experiencing it now. If you want to later on, you can put it, make a bathtub and just fill it up with this new show and sit naked in there and just absorb it through your skin.
Right. And you can send us emails of that.
Oh my God. So we basically covered where the heck has Greg Kinn been and, our studio move and what you can expect from now on. Now, in the next part of the show coming up, I got a great story, and you guys were all there, so we can join in the telling of how we met Clint Eastwood. All right. You know, the Greg Kinn Band recently played a charity event. It was a private gig for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Now, I've worked with these guys for years. I've done fundraising events with them before, and I'll tell you the story. I went over and looked at their website. There's tons of stories there. It'll make you cry. I want to skip all of that because it does get personal, but I got to tell you, what these people do is fantastic. They furnish kids with life-threatening medical conditions, and they give them a chance to fulfill their dreams. And you read some of the stories. I won't bore you with them now, but they're unbelievable. And the experience for the kids is remarkable, and there's some very happy endings, and the kids are really into it. Of course, you can go out and check their website out, Make-A-Wish Foundation. So fundraising is a big, big part of what they do. And, you know, look, the Greg Kinn Band is a soft touch, and this is one of our favorite charities. But the really cool thing, you guys, was it was not only our favorite charity, but it was also Clint Eastwood's favorite charity, the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And he owns this unbelievable golf course, Tehama Golf Course. Is that how you say it?
Yep, Tehama.
Tehama, and it's down in Carmel. It's absolutely drop-dead beautiful. What an incredible hunk of land. Views of the ocean, beautiful rolling hills. I mean, the fairways looked unbelievable. I can't imagine. That looks like golf heaven to me.
Yeah, multi-zillion dollar houses all along the fairways, probably one every fairway.
Yeah, exactly. And as we drove in to the gig, I mean, the drive down to Carmel is really rather nice. And we all hooked up. We had a caravan of cars going into the golf course. I never would have made it if I hadn't been following Skyler. Skyler, what did you have, a GPS or something?
I was actually following Dave Danza at that point.
I didn't know who you were following, but we had a caravan of cars going up. Beautiful drive. And the closer we got to Tehama Golf Course, the more spectacular the scenery got.
Yeah, Dave used to have a golf shop in Monterey.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, Dave Danza had a golf shop in Monterey. He knows all of the golf courses. He knows his way around all the back hills there. And
wow.
And that was crazy, by the way. I mean, getting from Monterey to Carmel.
Oh, my goodness.
Up to Tehama through the mountains.
Yeah.
Was nuts.
Yeah.
And there
was a point where, in fact, right around when I called you on the cell phone, where you just hit the ocean and suddenly you've got this panorama of the beach, you know? And then as you get into Carmel and you start to climb and you're looking down, it's really spectacular landscape.
Yeah, let's tell a real story, Greg.
Okay.
So as we're all caravanning out of the hotel on our way to Tehama.
Yeah, yeah.
Greg cannot find his way to actually follow the car in front of him, get stuck somewhere.
Yes.
And you lost your way. And
you were following me.
Yes, we were following you. And therefore, when you got to the turn, you didn't know which way to go, and you went straight, whereas everybody else went right.
There were
right.
four choices, and I made the first three wrong.
Exactly.
I did one straight. I went left. Everybody obviously went right.
Yes. Yeah, so
why didn't they wait for me? I was waiting for you guys to catch up with me because I didn't want to get way ahead.
No. It was all on you, Greg.
Oh yeah, it's all on me. All right. Anyway, we get there. We roll up now. In the daytime, driving up there, well,
the security was nuts.
Oh, it was incredible. There were at least two or three. What do you call
checkpoints.
Those checkpoints? Yeah, with the barriers Gate. And everything. And, you know, I really felt like we were going into, you know, Dwight D. Eisenhower's private golf course. It was really, security was extra tight. And, boy, they had a cast of characters up there. These are the high rollers. You know when they talk about how does the other half live? This is what they're talking about, except it's not the other half. I think these are the one percenters, Joel.
They must be, but they were having a good time.
Oh yeah.
And you know, God bless Make-A-Wish, because these people come out and they donate it, like each year they basically raise about $1 million a year.
Yeah, which is phenomenal.
At this gala event, which is just spectacular.
Right. So we get there, we set up our stuff, we have to wait until the auction. There were all these things for auction. It was a big celebrity auction. You know, trips
that
to
was the silent auction.
The silent auction. There was a big auction down in the other room, which I'll talk about in a minute. But we had to wait till they, you know, moved everything out so we could do our little line check. And Clint Eastwood's down there. So as soon as we got done, I went down because I wanted to meet Clint. I went down to take a peek at the grand dining room where the major auction was taking place as these people were having dinner.
And you had a seat at the celebrity table?
I didn't even know that. I get down there and a lady that's in charge, what was her name, Priscilla?
Pat.
Pat grabs me. Doesn't say a word, just drags me. And, you know, this is front and center. So everybody sees me arriving late. Everybody sees me saying hello to Clint Eastwood. She takes me right up to Clint Eastwood and introduces me. Now, you know, when you first meet Clint, you can't be a doofus. You got to say something at least halfway cool, right? What did I say to Clint Eastwood?
I don't know.
I was, you know, on the spot there. She says, this is Greg Kinn. And he kind of looked at me. I'm sure he didn't know who I was. You know, he looked at me and I go, and I had to say something. So I said, I'm the band leader. He goes, band leader, huh? I go, yeah. You got any requests? And he thinks for a minute, like real serious. He goes, just play whatever you normally play at a gig like this. I said, yes, sir, will do. And that was it. So later on, I'm trying to get a picture. I'm looking around. I'm two chairs down from Clint Eastwood at the celebrity table at this beautiful golf course. I mean, it's Mecca for everything, right? And nobody's around with a camera. 10 minutes before, they were taking pictures of me with a janitor. Everybody got a shot. Suddenly, I'm sitting next to Clint, and there's no cameras around. I'm thinking, well, this is the one shot that I would like to hang on my wall in my office, right? You know, me and Clint. So later on, I said, Clint, could you do one more picture? And he turns around, and he looks at me, goes, for the band leader, eh? The band leader?
The band leader.
Yeah. And I said,
sounds like the mafia. Yeah. Why?
And you say the band leader. You sound like you're a marching band.
I didn't know. I'm
the rock band here to play.
In his mind, it was the band leader.
I'm the artist.
Yeah. Anyway, he says, I haven't heard the band yet, so I can't say.
I can't leave Greg anywhere, man.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, man.
Clint Eastwood now thinks Greg Kinn is a marching band. He has no clue what you are doing.
So anyway, we're in this beautiful venue, and they gave us, for the backstage room, by the way, was the bar. It was the
saloon.
Bar.
It's called the saloon.
The saloon. And then we had big screen TVs. We had the World Series on and a football game on the other one. And they're making us drinks. They fed us a great dinner. Fantastic dinner.
And those house-made potato chips.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. Where did they come from?
They were made right there. They're made at the country club. It's spectacular. I mean, the fact is, we were sitting there at the bar watching the game, and we have, you know, total open bar, whatever you want.
Whatever you want.
All night, you know, and it's like, oh, my God. So yeah, the potato chips came, and we're going, man, these are fantastic. And we
well, let's go over
everything.
The drinks real quick. How did we start these drinks out? Greg started out powerful and hard with a
Diet Coke.
A Diet Coke.
I went.
He
for,
cut me off after three
what
DCs.
What did you then go
I
follow
went for?
For
a Stellar Artois.
A beer.
A beer.
Right. Well, what did you? You jumped right into the martini scene, didn't you?
I went
you?
Right into a hard drink. I went into some cognac.
Oh, my.
Cognac with a Coke back.
Whoa.
But then the lady after that, she came up with the foo-foo drink, remember? She wanted like a
dirty martini.
A dirty martini with coconut water and all kinds of weird crap in it. I don't know.
You got a little. You put a little umbrella in those kind of drinks, right?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
Anyway, the bartender, by the way, what was his name?
Remy.
Remy, right. Great guy.
Yes,
really
absolutely good.
And he was explaining to us, and the way he explained it, like I thought maybe Clint Eastwood got up early and made the potato chips himself. But no, the chef gets up early, cuts the potatoes.
I think Clint will probably shoot the chef if he doesn't make those every day. Yeah,
They were the best potato chips I've ever had.
I was the first one that had the potato chip, and I just went, my God, these things are great. And Randy said, yeah, we make them right here.
Yeah.
And then the next thing I know, Robert Barry, the bass player, had basically eaten my entire bowl.
Yeah. Yeah. And I believe we closed the bar on that one. We ate them all. I got like several bowls of these great potato chips. So now, you know, I'm saying we had such a nice time backstage. They treated us like gods. By the time I went down to meet Clint, you know, all I wanted to do was say hello. But for some reason, all the girls get their picture taken with Clint. Have you noticed that? He gets up, he's walking by, click, there's 35 cameras going, click, click, click. I'm standing there looking for somebody. Hey, would somebody take my picture with Clint? And nobody's going for it. So anyway, we had a great gig. We get upstairs. Now, Clint leaves after that. Oh, by the way, during the auction, George Lopez got up and entertained. He did a comedy set. Pretty funny. A lot of Latino humor, obviously. But he's working the room of the whitest room he's ever played. It's whiter than white. Everybody's white. They're all rich. It's the one percenters. And, he's doing white, rich white guy jokes, right? Basically. And they had a true auctioneer, you know, one of these guys that talks fast. And he was right next to me, Joel, literally like 2 feet away from me. And they're auctioning off things like an African safari for $30,000, you know, for you and five of your friends.
Well, that's how they raise $1 million.
Yeah.
A year, you know?
Well, these are high rollers. But you remember the Lucy show where she goes to the auction and she doesn't know she's bidding. She's scratching her nose and she finds out she bought some ridiculous piece of art. Well, it was like that. I was afraid to, like, you know, I had to sit on my hands because I scratched my nose. I think at one point, I sneezed, and I think he thought I was making a bid, you know, on a trip to Hawaii or something. So I just sat on my hands. I didn't want any question about that. Of course, everybody else is bidding like crazy. These people were like rolling in dough. We get out of there, and we go back up to the upstairs room,
the
grand ballroom, and it's now time to play the gig. And I thought the band did a pretty good job. The Sheik gets up there. Sheik's our roadie. He gives me a little piece of paper. It says George Lopez. And I'm right in the middle of a song. I'm thinking, okay, I'm doing a song. George Lopez. Good. Okay, good. What does that mean? But it means that George Lopez is still here and he'd like to get up on stage and join you in a song. And I thought to myself, well, that's unique. First of all, I didn't think that George Lopez knew who I was. Apparently he was a fan. He referred to me several times in his monologue, and he knew all the words. Joel, that guy got up there, and he actually sang on key.
I think Happy Man was a big hit in Mexico.
El Hombre Feliz.
Exactly. We have it right here, a vinyl copy of it.
And Lopez is up there, and, you know, he's doing a pretty decent job with the vocals. He's coming in at the right places. Rye shredding. We had a great time. He was doing a dance that looked like something like, you know, Sammy Davis Jr. would do in the Rat Pack. He was doing this like two-step, you know?
George was great.
Dressed in a suit You know, he looked great. And I got to tell you, I didn't really know George Lopez from Adam. And now that I've met the guy, he's great. I love this guy.
George is super funny.
And he loved getting up and playing with the band. So George Lopez and the Greg Kinn band making sweet music together at Tehama Golf Course. And then when it was all over, and by the way, I just want to say right now for the record books that there was more beautiful women, I think, at that gig. These are the wives of the millionaires. They normally they don't have unattractive wives. I mean, most of these women were spectacular.
Absolutely.
And they were dressed to the nines, beautiful dresses, gowns, diamonds you dripping know. Off of them. And, you know, it took a little while for everybody to leave. And we're leaving. We now have to drive back to the hotel, but now it's foggy. Now it's like fog as thick as New England clam chowder.
It's soupy.
Soupy. And, you know, we had trouble getting up there in the daytime. Driving back, I just was on your bumper. I just stayed, you know, 10 feet away from you the whole time. I couldn't, you know, it was just insane. We get back to the hotel, and it was like an Adrian Barbeau movie. It was like the fog, you know what I mean? It would roll in, and, you know, there was a line where the fog just, it was like a curtain, you know what I mean? And they just draw it. I remember getting back to the hotel, but I could barely find my room in the fog. We stayed over. We had a great time. That was one of the most fun gigs that I think we played in years. It was all for the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and we raised, what, over a million?
Close to a million.
Close to a million.
We stayed at the Hyatt Regency. They put us up at the Hyatt.
And yeah,
we
really nice. We it's
right
a nice Hyatt.
Monte Golf Course.
Beautiful.
Which is just a really nice course.
You know, I'm not really a golfer, but I wish I was so we could, because Ramey, the bartender, invited us up to come and play.
Absolutely. We're all going to go back to Carmel.
Yeah, and play with Clint. Club. Play with Clint.
Well, I don't know if we'll be playing with Clint.
All right. Well, maybe we'll be playing with George. Who knows? Yeah. Anyway, we had a great time. We raised almost $1 million for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. Personally, I got home. I had a warm, kind of fuzzy feeling about the whole thing. It was a big, fat success. And the highlight of my night was meeting Clint Eastwood. Because, you know, when you're sitting there with Clint, you don't want to say something stupid. Like, make my day. You know, because everybody's saying that. You know, everybody that came by came up and said, hey, I know what you're thinking. Or, you know, make my day. Or
do you feel lucky?
Yeah, do you feel lucky? A man's got to know his limitations. And everybody that, you know, was an unending stream of people coming up to get the benediction from Clint Eastwood. And every one of them said something stupid. Except me. I was the band leader. I'm the umpa-pa guy. All right. Now, when we come back, I think since we've got the gang here in place, and Joel is here. Why don't we go back and do a Berserkly Days story? I got some ideas I wanted to talk to you about. The early days of Berserkly Records and one of the most incredible eras of rock and roll history. And that's coming up next on the brand new Greg Kinn Show.
All right, you've been listening to the KIHN Greg Kinn Show.
You know, it's interesting. Every time I play a gig, people come up to me and they've always got stories about how they saw the band back in the old days, like at the Keystone or the Long Branch. You know, these are the places that we cut our teeth and, geez, we played there for like a decade. But, you know, for instance, do you remember the Firehouse gig we just played recently? I asked for a show of hands, I said, how many people out there saw the band back in the day of the Keystones? And I'll bet 50% of the people raised their hands.
Absolutely.
And it was amazing to me because you told me you just ran into the guy from the Long Branch.
Malcolm Williams.
Malcolm. I haven't seen Malcolm in 30 years.
I hadn't either. I ran into him down at our local farmer's market with Steve Nelson, the drummer from Earthquake.
Yes.
He was down there.
What was it, Old Home Week or something?
Absolutely. I don't know. And Steve grabbed me and said, you got to say hello to Malcolm.
Wow.
So, you know, we were kind of bullshitting with Malcolm and brought back lots of memories.
Yeah.
The Long Branch was like, what a place. That was
It was fabulous. Unbelievable. And we, you know, this was the owner, the guy that ran the place, we were in cahoots with him. So almost anything used to go.
I was his attorney.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I represented the Long Branch. Malcolm with the city, with Berkeley City Council. You know, with all their permits, and all the crazy
stuff. That must have been like, permit hell. He was right at the corner of San Pablo and Dwight Way, if I remember correctly.
The People's Republic of Berkeley.
Yes, and it was nuts down there. I'd be driving home 2-3 in the morning. I don't know how I got home in those days, but the cops, they left you alone, and it was a different era back then.
You know, the Long Branch was great. I mean, it was this dirty, stinky club right on the corner.
Your shoes stuck to the floor when you walked in.
It smelled like beer and piss.
Oh, it did. I mean, it really did. It really did. Urine and beer. And the beer was greenish, if I remember correctly. Anyway, do you remember the incredible lineup of bands? Like, first of all, the house band in the early days was the Rockets, which featured Eddie Money on lead vocals. Dan Alexander was the lead guitar player.
He actually put the band together.
Right. And they fired him, right?
As soon as they got going, they got rid of him.
That's one thing we've got in common. I fired Dan once for much the same thing, But I look back on those days. You know, John Cunaberty was the drummer in the Rockets. He went on to be Joe Satriani's producer.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable amount of talent.
What was that studio that he was running? The famous studio in Sausalito?
Was it the plant? I think it was the plant. Anyway, that place was just incredible. And I remember we were, Earthquake was the house band after Eddie Money. Then the Shakers were the house band. And then we were the house band. And we were playing on every Sunday night, and we would open for whoever was playing there. And that's how we got to open for Toots and the Maytals. We got to open for Patti Smith, and all these crazy groups had come through there, like Talking Heads.
I remember going way back when the Modern Lovers.
The Modern Lovers.
A Boston band came out here, and it was Jonathan Richman and the Modern Lovers. And
what a buzz.
He was just part of the band. And every major record company from L.A. flew up to see him at the Long Branch.
Wow.
And
Moss from A&M.
Yeah. Oh, Mo Smith and I forget, you know, Denny
the guy
Cordell.
When Warner Brothers already had a deal with him or was going to make a deal.
The deal hadn't been made yet. That was the point. They were all up here, you know, wooing him or wooing them, as the case may be. And as it turned out, they signed with Warner Brothers, signed a huge deal. And made zillions of tracks, and ultimately we at Berserkly bought him.
Yeah,
it
was produced by John Cale, right?
John Cale, and then also produced by Kim Fowley.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
And, we bought like 30, 40 tracks, including the original Modern Lovers album was part of the masters that we bought from them.
I remember they made a live album at the Long Branch. And back in those days, it was hard to do a live album. There was no overdubbing. You didn't go into the studio. In fact, you can buy that still. I think it's out there in the world somewhere. We played, then we graduated up to the Keystone, which every major band of the day played at the Keystone. And for we were friends with Earthquake. They were label mates with me on Berserkly. But all of those bands, Eddie Money went solo. He immediately, Jerry Garcia used to play there like once a month. Merle Saunders, I remember. The Tubes when they were just starting out. And a lot of the New York bands would come, like Blondie, Tom Petty, they come and they play there. I remember the night the Ramones played. You remember that gig?
Oh, that was insane.
They came in, they showed up at, like, the doors open at 9. They played from 9:15 to 9:45, I think, and left. And there wasn't a soul in the club. The bartender and the cocktail waitresses saw the gig. They ran in. They were all crazy. They were New York speed freaks. They ran in. They set up their stuff. They blasted through the set in no time, and they were gone. And then when most of us got there 10:30 or so, like, where's the Ramones? Oh, they played and left already. Crazy stuff. But, of course, back in those days, man, Berserkly Records, we weren't following the rules. We did it. Whatever we wanted to do, we did it. Remember we didn't have a record president. We had a reigning loony, and that was Matthew Kaufman,
who was
a brilliant guy, a little bent, a little crazy, but brilliant. He really believed in publicity, and he would do things that would just grab attention. Like, remember the six-pack? Six picture sleeve singles in a, like, a folding, you know, accordion.
Plastic thing. Accordion.
Right.
That's a whole other story about how we were selling those in England, and they had to come to the hotel, and they were whipping them out on, you know, hand carts. But,
wow.
But that's the story for another day.
Yeah. I got to tell you, I think back and when you said you ran into Malcolm, and it all started at the Firehouse gig, and I was talking to a lot of people at the meet and greet afterwards. You know, we were out there signing stuff, and everybody had a Malcolm story or a Long Branch story or a
Bobby Corona,
or a Keystone, and it really brought back some great memories. That was a magical time. I don't think that'll ever be repeated. That's the kind of stuff that we cover here on The Greg Kin Show, the new Greg Kin Show.
K-I-H-N, The Greg Kin Show.
Yeah, you know, it's fun being Greg Kin. I get to talk about all kinds of stuff. And one of the things, you know, I'm always adding another career onto my, you know, the club sandwich, which is my career, right? It's like a club sandwich. You got radio, you got music, you got the books. Now you can throw in... And this is an interesting one, public speaking. I actually have a public speaking engagement coming up. I'll be speaking in front of the Kiwanis Club of Willow Glen down there in San Jose the day before Thanksgiving. It's like a pre-Thanksgiving thing. And they want me to come and be a featured speaker. I'm going to actually give a speech. What do you think I should talk about, Joel?
I don't know. Turkeys?
I've already got it thought out. You know what I'm going to talk about?
Reinventing.
Reinventing yourself. A human being is constantly in need of reinvention. Moving forward through life, you're going to change careers. You're going to change jobs. You're going to change wives. You're going to change attitudes. You're going to change haircuts. Nothing is constant but change. And as you go through life, you learn how to do this, that, and the other. And you know, even though I know nothing about public speaking, I am looking forward to this. It's going to be fun. Should I bring the guitar and do a song whenever it gets really thick? Just kill him with a song?
I think you're verbose enough to be able to carry the day.
Yeah, verbose. And I'll tell you the truth. I feel as if I do have a message here. I don't know exactly what it is, but whatever it is, I want to leave it imprinted on these people's brains.
I think basically you've been doing it in real life, and that's, you know, what it is.
Right. I basically
reinventing yourself over and over and over and over again.
Yes. But in my case, it was all forced. I had to.
Well, that's how it is for everybody.
Oh, yeah. You're right. I forgot. Hey, listen, I really enjoyed hanging around and doing the show with you guys. It's a different format. It's a lot more conversational. We're going to continue to tinker with this thing and retool it, mess with it. Everybody's got some ideas. Joel's got his ideas. Skyler's got some ideas. I got ideas. We're all going to be throwing them down. And it should be, you know, if you're going to listen to the show, this next stretch is going to be really interesting.
And we'd love to hear what your ideas
are. Oh, that's the key. We really need for you guys to give us some feedback.
So go over to gregkin.com or you can go to facebook.com/gregkin. Leave us a message, comment, feedback, etc.
Yeah, leave us your thoughts on how the show is today. You know, that we got a sign of a new format. I'd like to get some feedback. I want to know what you guys think. You know, we were shocked when we found out that people were, when we did some research and found out that people were actually fast-forwarding through the music.
Bored by the music.
Bored by the music, and they just wanted to hear talk. So, hey, look, we're going to figure out what you want, and we're going to give it to you in large wheelbarrow loads, and I hope you enjoy it. So be sure to enjoy this show, and join us again for the next scheduled Greg Kin Show. Now, I don't even know when that show is scheduled for, but I'm telling you right now, it's going to be good. You're going to love it. Keep going back to gregkin.com because it all starts and begins right there.
Yeah, and tell your friends and tell your relatives and, you know, get as many people as you can to
tune in. It's time to get the truth out there, and we are pumped up. So tell all your friends. Tell your mother-in-law. By the way, I'll be seeing my mother-in-law.
You are one lucky guy.
I am. Yeah, just yeah, I can't wait. Anyway, I've enjoyed the show. Tell me how you feel about our new, the new look and the new sound of the Greg Kin Show. Let us know what you think. GregKin.com is the place to go. Skylar, anything I'm leaving out here for the wrap-up?
Nope, that's about it. I'm Skylar Turtle.
I'm Greg Kin.
I'm Joel Turtle.
Rock on.